Radio Prague News.
Police have confirmed that a blaze in the northeast of the country, which left a 2-year-old Romani girl in critical condition, was arson. Outgoing Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek in the West Bank on Thursday ruled out a change in the EU's stance on the radical Islamist party Hamas. The Prime Minister-designate Jan Fischer has wrapped up a series of meetings with candidates for the new caretaker government. Police have confirmed that a blaze last Saturday, which left a 2-year-old girl fighting for her life, was arson. The attack took place on a family home in the town of Vítkov in the northeast of the country. So far, the police say they have evidence that 3 Molotov cocktails were used. They are searching for the perpetrators. Targeted in the attack were 8 members of a Romani family. Of the 3 hurt, the little girl was the most seriously injured, suffering severe burns to 80% of her body. She remains in critical condition. Her parents also suffered burns, but their injuries were not life-threatening. On Thursday, Mikhail Kotsab, the outgoing minister for human rights and minorities, visited the mother in hospital. He described what happened to the family as a horror and terrorist attack. Outgoing Prime Minister Mirek Topolánek has said that the European Union's position on the radical Islamist party Hamas will not change. He made the statement at a joint press conference in Ramallah in the West Bank on Thursday after meeting with the Prime Minister of the Palestinian Authority, Salam Fayyad. The Czech Republic currently holds the EU presidency and has tried to play a role in diffusing tension in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. On Thursday, Prime Minister Topolánek made clear the EU was now waiting for a new Israeli strategy, one that could emerge during an upcoming visit to Washington by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The Czech Prime Minister-designate Jan Fischer has wrapped up a series of meetings with candidates for ministerial posts in the country's planned caretaker government. The technocratic government agreed upon by the 2 main parties in parliament, the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats, together with the Greens, will lead the country until October, when the country will see early elections. After meeting with the candidates, the Prime Minister-designate met on Friday with President Václav Klaus to inform him of developments. The president has confirmed he will name the new government to office on May the 8th. A controversial art show at a Prague gallery depicting Nazis wearing the Star of David instead of the swastika was shut down on Thursday within half an hour of opening, following protests by Jewish leaders. The exhibition by a Polish artist featured a giant poster and 8 large format photos. Franciszek Baniai, the head of the Jewish community in Prague, charged the images were strongly anti-Semitic in character. The artist, operating under an assumed name, reportedly wanted to protest Israel's role in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The controversy has come at a time when the Czech Republic has seen renewed debate over right-wing extremism. I'm Jan Wellinger, and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Rosie Johnston. Coming up in today's programme, is it the end of the road for the Czech EU presidency? We'll hear about the highlights of a festival of European films that's just wound up in Prague, and find out all about a new project intended to remind Czechs of some of the pathetic and grotesque aspects of the communist era. We'll bring you a summary of the week's business news, and later on in the arts, 2 leading cartoonists living and working in the Czech Republic explain what keeps them at the top.
Right now there's a big fashion for computer-generated animation. We cannot match them for all those big special effects. What we can match them for is imagination.
All that and even more coming your way, so please stay with us. If there were any doubts that the Czech Republic's presidency of the European Union effectively ended when the country's government fell last month, they were dispelled on Thursday when only a handful of the bloc's regional development ministers came to a Czech-hosted meeting. On top of that, the creator of a controversial sculpture in Brussels says he will remove it before the Czech presidency ends, in protest at the toppling of the government at such an important time. Ian Willoughby reports.
The Czech government was voted out of office on March 24th. Less than halfway through the country's 6-month presidency of the European Union. Czech officials tried to put a brave face on things, saying the administrative mechanisms were in place to ensure the remainder of the presidency went smoothly. However, most observers insisted the fall of the government meant the Czech Republic's EU presidency was, to all intents and purposes, dead in the water. Confirmation of that came on Thursday, when only 7 of the 26 invited EU regional development ministers turned up for an informal meeting in Mariánské Lázně, though informal, such gatherings are normally attended by ministers. Czech Regional Development Minister Cyril Svoboda, who's hosting the two-day meeting, admitted the low turnout was partly due to the drama of the Czech government being voted out of office. Everybody in Europe knows, he said, that the country's cabinet is in resignation. On top of that embarrassment, the creator of a controversial sculpture that's been one of the most reported on aspects of the Czech presidency says he'll remove it from an EU building in Brussels nearly 2 months earlier than originally planned. David Černý says he'll take down Entropa, which pokes fun at European stereotypes, by the 10th of May, when a caretaker cabinet should be in place in Prague. The artist told reporters on Thursday the move was a civic gesture in protest at what he called the international disgrace of the Czech government being brought down at such an important time. For that, Mr. Černý blamed the left-wing parties who voted the cabinet out and President Václav Klaus, who critics say engineered its fall.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Turning now to the world of film. Thursday marked the end of an 8-day international film festival that will now be making its way around the country. The Days of European Film, now in their 16th year, presented more than 50 feature, documentary and short films from across the continent. Christine Falvey has more.
There is no shortage of film festivals in the Czech Republic, from the distinguished Karlovy Vary Festival to local exhibitions of experimental film. Not so many of them, however, have been around as long as the Days of European Film, which began in 1993. I visited Miss Jana Gabrielova, one of the festival's organizers, to ask what's given the festival its longevity.
We offer spectators a chance to see not only current works from countries whose cinematography is famous here, but also from those European countries whose films are not well known to usual Czech cinema goers. It is always important to have a choice, and we bring alternative to American blockbusters and proof the European films can find their audience.
Among the highlights of this year's festival was the attendance of Czech-French director Karel Prokop and his 1998 documentary Memories of a Border Guard Dog, which was screened as part of the special section marking the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Iron Curtain. Mr. Prokop left Czechoslovakia in the 1960s after spending 6 months in prison under suspicion of treason, espionage and subversion. His one thought turned to escaping to France, where he later made a successful career as a filmmaker. Memories of a Border Guard Dog follows the life of a sentry on the Czechoslovak border from after World War II through the fall of the Berlin Wall, and the realization that his life was spent guarding a thing that no longer even exists.
After the collapse of communism, I was able to come back, and by chance I got the opportunity to see what was at the time classified film material about the Iron Curtain from the Czech border. And I said to myself it was fantastic material for a documentary, because people, particularly in the West, really had no idea what the Iron Curtain actually looked like. Everyone knew the Berlin Wall, but few could imagine that an impenetrable enclosure actually divided Europe from the Baltic Sea to the Adriatic. So I'm very happy that this festival gives my film the opportunity to be rediscovered by Czech audiences, and particularly young audiences who can't imagine anything like that.
There was indeed no lack of diversity at the festival, which, in addition to spanning cinema from Ireland to Turkey, also hosted screenwriting seminars, a revue of pulp film art called Cabaret Caligula, and a short films section screening the work of Czech students. If you missed the festival or want to catch more of it, the Days of European Film will be going on to Brno and Olomouc in Moravia, where it will be running until the end of the month.
Christian Falvey with that report. Now, if you happen to cross Prague's Náměstí Republiky on Thursday, you can't have failed to notice a rather unusual happening that was taking place. The launch of Circus Totality, or the Totalitarian Circus, one of the cultural projects chosen to accompany the Czech Republic's EU presidency. As part of the project, a new textbook about Central Europe's communist past has been written, there'll be a series of plays and performances staged, and a giant communist timeline has been unveiled on Prague's Náměstí Republiky. I went along to pay it a visit.
Einem unbekannten Land, vor gar nicht allzu langer Zeit, war eine.
A song by legendary Czech pop star Karel Gott blares out the speakers and encourages passers-by to roll up to the totalitarian circus. The project, which was selected by the government to tie into this country's EU presidency, focuses on all that was grotesque about this country's communist past. In the true spirit of any circus, the project is set to hit the road and tour the continent in the coming months. Andrej Sihlaj was its artistic director.
We are trying to focus on the history of the three Central European countries, means Czechoslovakia, Poland, Hungary and Eastern Germany. So we are going around all those four countries and other Czech towns also.
You don't seem such an old man, and you were the person who was behind the artistic direction of the Circus Totality. How did you do your research, and do you really have a relationship to that time? You must have been when communism fell, about 9 or 10 or 11.
Yeah, I have been 11, you are right. And of course, yeah, that's a very often question, how we can speak about totality if we were so young. And this is a very important thing, is that we are not trying to educate about the totality, but we are trying to find and to search how the totality survived till now. The atmosphere in the society, the passivity, I think that this is what we are a little bit bringing with us still till now, coming from totalitarian times.
On display on Prague's Náměstí Republiky on Thursday was a colourful communism timeline with information both in Czech and English. Those reading about the era were assailed by actors in period costume, staging a street performance. Pepa Wiesner was one of the performers.
This is about the communist system. We just make or do it some fashion show. I can say a funny fashion show, but it's about, for me, it's a very important theme just now and here in the Czech Republic.
The fashion show provoked somewhat mixed reviews from passers-by.
Můj prapradědeček bojoval na východní frontě.
My great-grandfather fought in the Red Army for the liberation of Czechoslovakia on the Eastern Front in World War II, and he died fighting for this country. And I would say that this is an insult to his memory and the memory of all Czech soldiers who died in this country in World War II.
Za Československou republiku za druhé světové války.
I think that was really interesting, that the girls and the boys, they were a little bit funny, but a little bit also sad, because when I imagine that was concerning our history, it was really sad.
It was nice, but I didn't understand everything. I think I'm too young. I saw something from the history, from the time when I was born, maybe, but I don't remember it, so.
Has it changed the way you think about communism in this country, or?
I think it has changed, and it changes every day.
The communism timeline will be on Prague's Náměstí Republiky until May the 3rd. Look out for theatre performances at Divadlo Archa and a communism simulator in the capital's NOD gallery, which both form a part of the project. And now to this week's business news roundup, which is with Chris Johnston and Iva Vokurkova.
The International Monetary Fund has issued a startlingly gloomy prediction for Czech economic growth this year. The prestigious institution says the economy will shrink by 3.5% and barely get back into growth next year. The Czech government and National Bank recently said that the worst-case scenario this year is for the economy to shrink by 2%. Most local analysts have described the IMF prediction as too pessimistic, but they warned that unemployment could rocket to over 10% this year.
The government has narrowed down the bidders vying for state-owned airline share SA by weeding out bids from Russian carrier Aeroflot and Czech financial group ODN. That leaves KLM Air France and the partnership of Czech holding company Unimex and the biggest Czech private air carrier Travel Service still in contention. Share SA is expected to be privatized by October with an anticipated price tag of around 4.5 billion crowns or $215 million.
While Aeroflot's half-hearted bid has fallen by the wayside, the country's biggest privately held oil company is clearly eyeing up expansion in the Czech Republic. The president of Lukoil, Vajit Alekperov, confirmed that it would like to get a stake in the Czech Republic's biggest oil refinery company, Česká rafinerka, in an interview with Czech television this week. But Alekperov said that he is not interested in doing an asset swap with Rafinerska's majority shareholder, Poland's PKN Orlen. Lukoil already owns a chain of Czech petrol stations, and the Lukoil boss says it wants to be in all stages from oil extraction to petrol pump sales.
The Ministry of Finance has whittled down the bidders for what has been dubbed the contract of the century. This is a 115 billion crown tender to clean up some of the Czech Republic's worst ecological damage dating from before 1992. Half of the original six contenders have now been excluded from the tender. This leaves Czech companies Geosan Group and Environmental Services and the local unit of Danish company Marius Pedersen Engineering still in the running. These will now be invited to put a price tag on their cleanup offers.
And finally, McDonald's appears to be loving it in the Czech Republic. The fast food chain's Czech sales last year shot up nearly 18% to around 3.7 billion crowns. McDonald's expects growth again this year and will open a handful of new restaurants, even though it is already feeling the effect of fewer hungry tourists descending on the country. It also plans to test out coffee bars in new and reconstructed restaurants with the liquid offered in porcelain instead of plastic cups. McDonald's claims to be the biggest fast food chain in the country with 35% of the market.
A reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where now it's time for a fresh edition of the arts. The studio Bratři v triku, or Brothers in T-shirts, has been the major producer of Czech animated films since the 1940s. Virtually every talent in Czech animation has gone through the studio, and it's won essentially every national and international award available to animators. But most importantly, perhaps, the work of the studio has influenced generation after generation of Eastern Europeans and audiences elsewhere in the world as well. In this week's Arts, Christian Falvey takes a peek into the cradle of Czech animation.
If you're looking for cartoon animals blowing each other up with TNT, luring each other off cliffs and the like, you've come to the wrong country. Gentleness, imaginative adventure, and a Pacific nature reign in Czech children's cinematography. And it was conceived by this studio, Bratři v triku, amid the rubble left after World War II. Today, 64 years later, Bratři v triku is still up and running, as unfailingly as its 81-year-old chief, Zdena Dajčová. Ms. Dajčová came to the studio in 1945 to make pocket money over the summer, and has, by her own estimate, made some 1,000 films there since. I came to the studio to listen to her memories from the early days of Czech animation.
My former colleagues who tried to escape being sent and work to Germany, so they somehow tried to proclaim that they are working on some cartoon film. And they found some black and white Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. And my colleague, they were really looking at it and they were learning how to move with the object, with the characters. But of course, fact is that we never try to copy Disney style. We somehow try to only learn something from the system, how it's really done.
The name and logo was conceived by the then 24-year-old Zdeněk Miller, author of the famous Mole cartoons and one-time chief of the studio, who received a 3-day holiday for his contribution. The logo shows three curly-headed brothers in T-shirts, which, aside from the obvious, had the added connotation of brothers in a trick film, as animation was referred to in Czech at the time. From its founding under the guidance of famed puppeteer Jiří Trnka, known even in the West as the Disney of the East, the studio went on to win hundreds of awards at festivals the world over, from the Grand Prix in Cannes to an Oscar for the 1960 short Monroe. The truly priceless product of their work, however, is the indelible mark it left on every Czech and Slovak child from the Second World War until the onslaught of Western programming at the end of the Cold War. Throughout a long, bleak, and often frightening period of totalitarianism, Bratři v Triku built a colorful world of tenderness and artistic brilliance that remains the hallmark of Czech children's films today.
As Czech people, we have a little different feeling about the story. It's more poetic. And especially with Jiří Trnka, who was really himself puppeteers, we try to develop our, as we say, Czech school of animation. What we had in our mind, that we always try to find the best artist, background artist, and best musician, because we feel that if we are doing something for kids, we should give them something best. And we don't like to show, I would say, some kind of nasty, some lie or something, some beating or shooting. We don't like this, because we somehow feel that when they will grow up, they will somehow face this kind of situation. But when they are little, they should really have something better.
Dobrý večer.
Ms. Dajčová met her husband, American animator Gene Deitch, when he came to the studio on a 10-day business trip in the late 1950s. Fascinated with the environment, and in particular with his wife-to-be, he stayed in Prague to become one of the only Americans to live through the bulk of the communist era on this side of the Iron Curtain. He later wrote a book about his experiences called For the Love of Prague. Mr. Deitch was working for Rebel U.S. animation studio United Productions of America, the hatchery for Academy Award-winning characters like Mr. Magoo and Gerald McBoing-Boing. UPA was making a splash in animation in the early days by revolting against realism for the sake of both art and cost. What they considered their own unique method, however, Mr. Deitch found well-developed in Prague when he first came in 1959.
We were doing something completely different than Disney did. If you worked for Disney, you had to learn how to draw Mickey Mouse. If you worked for Warner Brothers, you had to learn how to draw Bugs Bunny. You had to draw MGM, you had to draw Tom and Jerry. But UPA came out with the idea that we don't want to have standard characters. We want to be able to have different style for every film according to the story. And so when I came here to Prague, the amazing thing was that they were doing exactly the same thing, which we thought we were just absolutely the originators of this idea. And the Czechs had been doing this all the time. And I thought, my God, it's amazing. Here we are behind the Iron Curtain. They're seemingly 50 years behind us and everything else. But when it came to art, they were right up there.
The hardline Communist Party came to power in Czechoslovakia not long after the studio's establishment. While vast changes swept into most every aspect of life in the country, interestingly, one place that was left aside from the upheaval was Bratři v Triku. While indeed the studio had its share of politically motivated firings, for example, Bratři v Triku was, for the most part, spared the general tribulation of the era within a special shell of innocuousness.
Many people were tremendously suppressed. It was a really dark period. But yet, right here was a little oasis. We didn't pay any attention to that. And we were protected from communism for the simple reason that nobody understood any of those things I was just telling you before. Nobody understood how to do it, why we do it, or whatever. They only knew that it was something valuable to the nation. They knew that if they had these cartoons, that was the one way that they could get some kind of renomen or a cultural lift or win prizes, because they couldn't win prizes with their economic system. They couldn't win prizes with their refrigerators. They couldn't win prizes with their crummy automobiles that they made, but they could win prizes with those silly little cartoon films.
The end of communism also meant the end of Bratstvo Triku as a nationalized entity. The studio today has found sustenance in cooperative and hired work for other studios around the world. They nonetheless remain essential to the production of almost every cartoon film made in the Czech Republic and still participate in the work of the leading animators in this part of the world, such as Academy Award nominee Michaela Pavlatova. Though they have adapted to a new age economically and technically, the future for Bratstvo Triku does not mean going the way of computer animation. The studio still sticks to tried and true craftsmanship of pencil on paper.
We are holding on to what is now erroneously called 2D animation, which doesn't mean anything. But what we really do is we do drawn animation. We're still drawing with a pencil on paper. We're not creating action on a computer. Those characters don't exist at all. This is great for achieving greater realism. But my main theory and my main feeling about animation is that the whole world of art is open to animation. And we can do things that Pixar can't do. For example, we can animate Picasso, we can animate Braque, we can animate Ruog, we can animate Chagall, whatever, you know, and all kinds of graphic styles. And so I don't think that you can't just brush off 2D animation, as they want to call it, as being something out of the way. Right now there's a big fashion for computer-generated animation, and we cannot match them for realism. We cannot match them for all those big special effects. What we can match them for is imagination and open up the whole world of graphic art to our work.
Jean Deitch ending that edition of The Arts by Christian Falvey. And that's all we've got time for today here on Radio Prague. So from me, Rosie Johnston, and the rest of the team here in Prague, it's thanks for listening and goodbye. Thank you.